From the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, this is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast. I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
Coming up on the program,
what is the real cost of gardening?
Mike Novak with the Environmental Report, your questions, our answers, and letters from kids. We'll explain more.
And we also have this YouTuber. He's from the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains in Tennessee. He's a minimal work garden expert, a fruit forest expert, really neat homesteader guy, Aaron Thatcher.
All that and more coming up right now.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast is permeating into your ears with your host, Joey Baird.
And it could be the weeds. Some gardeners try to get all the weeds out of their garden. Other gardeners leave them in their garden. It's really a decision that you need to make. There's benefits to both sides of that. It's just something that you need to figure out what you want to do for your garden.
And Holly Baird.
Canning is a science. When you're canning, you want to make sure you follow the directions, follow the recipe, don't cut corners, don't replace things. It's crucial to you, your health, and your family.
They're professional gardeners with full-time jobs. And they're on the air now.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast. I'm Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
Behind the TWVG microphone here in the WI Garden Media Studios in southeast Wisconsin. The information that you're going to hear is vital and important to the life and the success of your garden. You just may have to tweak some of the dates and times you apply for your particular growing zone. If you're tuning in for the very first time, welcome. We appreciate you tuning in. If you're tuning in for the 23rd time and you've listened to all our podcasts, you can also download them for free. We appreciate that and thank you for coming back and joining us for another episode. Again, if you want to check out all previous episodes of the podcast, you can find that underneath the podcast tab on our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Very easy to navigate. We've got a lot of other stuff going on there. And if you're tuning in for the very first time and have no idea who we are, Holly will tell you who we are, and then we'll get into what does it really cost to garden.
So we produce several weekly videos on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. These videos include gardening, getting your garden started, all that good stuff, growing a garden, troubleshooting. We have things like reusing items, and then we also have things like what to do with the food you grow, cooking ideas, canning what you grow, things like that. Then we also have our quarterly digital magazine. This magazine comes out quarterly. It's a full-color magazine. It's on our website. It's free to download. You can print it out. You can put it on your reading device, what have you, and that comes out. We have a new one coming out in June.
So with that,
and then we
being,
also have the podcast.
Right. With that being said, all that's for free. It's easy to navigate through the website, and we encourage you to check it out. You can also sign up for a weekly email so you don't miss anything that we do. That's a big button that says "Be the first to know" on the right hand side. So let's talk about, we're getting into gardening season. Some people are already gardening. We're already gardening. We've already got stuff planted.
Yeah, but some people don't start until Memorial Day weekend around
here. Right, in the southeast Wisconsin area. There are some people that garden year-round.
Right.
There are some people that only garden 2 or 3 months out of the year. So what does it really cost to garden? Well, it comes down to a number of factors. It determines where you live, mm-hmm. first of all. If you live in the south portions of the state of Texas, you're gardening almost year-round. You're already harvesting onions and tomatoes and all your good, your warm weather crops, and you're getting ready to take a little break when the heat hits, and you're going to start again after that in late July, early August, somewhere in that range, and try to get another batch of tomatoes in. If you're in Maine, things are a little different. You're limited on the time that you can garden outside. Now, if you're in a greenhouse, obviously, there's an expense there. Now, we won't be able to cover all the options and possibilities when it comes to what does it cost. But we'll give you some idea, because most of you, if not all of you who are listening, are gardeners. Mm-hmm. You garden in some form or fashion, large or small, and you might want to expand. If you're tuning in and you want to learn about gardening, well, there you go. Welcome. So we'll give you some ideas of what it takes to financially, and you also, no matter what the financial cost of it is, you've got to look at it as the time spent and what your return on investment is. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a flower gardener and all you intend to do is plant flowers for the beauty and maybe harvest a few of them and put them on the centerpiece of your table, that's fine. There is no edible, you know, reward to that. But
unless you're
unless what?
You're a little Danny.
Well, yeah. unless you're 2 years old and you like to taste every flower that you see. It's not recommended. Don't do that. But, you know, you can see where I'm coming from on this.
Yeah. So that's one thing people do is they grow the flowers. I don't, if you're listening to us, I'm not sure you're only growing flowers, though. So then there's, you have to think about vegetables.
But we don't discriminate.
We don't discriminate. And if you enjoy our podcast and all you grow is flowers and maybe one tomato plant, that's perfect. Or if you all you grow is flowers and you just like hearing us talk about gardening, great. Anyway, so
your time is first of all.
What?
Your time. That's something that costs in gardening. Your time.
But
for many of us who are doing it, we don't normally take that in consideration because we know we're not saying, well, I've worked 4 hours in the garden this week and I'm charging myself $12 an hour, so that's $48 of my time spent. Not very many people do that on a piece of paper next to the door, okay?
So that's your time, but maybe gardening for you is like your neighbor's golf game or what have you, or
drinking habit.
So actually maybe you might come ahead if you're growing vegetables, you're not consuming large amounts of alcohol, or maybe you are while you're growing, or you're not going to the driving range and paying for a bucket of balls. So this is a hobby for you that you enjoy, and it's something that you, maybe it relieves your stress, it gives you some exercise, it gets you on the fresh air, gets you some vitamin D, all good things.
Well, let's talk about equipment-wise, okay? Mm-hmm. And that really determines what level or size of gardening you're going to attempting. Are you strictly container gardening? You require containers. You know, Rootmaker's got some really nice grow bags. I'm just telling you, that's one of the sponsors that we work with. We're very pleased with their products. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go containers, you probably don't need a rake or a shovel.
Right.
Or, you need a hand trowel, most likely.
Right.
But you don't need a garden fork. You probably don't need one of those. If you're going to raise bed garden, Art of the Garden's got some nice products there that you can use. But keep in mind, let's say you do buy grow bags or Art of the Garden merchandise, and I'm just picking those two out because that's the topic we're covering. We're not specifically targeting those two sponsors. But let's say, you spend, I'm just putting a number out there, let's say $100. So next year, if you do exactly what you did this year, technically you've only spent $50. If you do it third year, you're only spending $25. You know, it breaks it down, or not 25, yeah, 25, mm-hmm. half. Eventually, you're going to have very minimal to zero cost. True enough, when you start gardening, no matter what level you start at, whether you go 2,000 square feet and buy a tiller, or you do 25 containers and buy some compost, there's an upfront cost that you're going to have to endure.
Mm-hmm.
That's called an investment. We understand that. But each year that you garden, that initial cost decreases.
But
yes,
you could do this very minimally. You could borrow a shovel from your neighbor, perhaps, or coworker or whatnot. You could turn over the soil in a 4x4 area. You could, perhaps you found some containers on the side of the road. You know, you can think about all these things. And then once you have your garden established, maybe you have a friend who has seeds. And they're like, hey, here's some seeds. I know people get seeds in the mail. I saw some basil seeds on some pasta sauce at the store. So, you never know where you could find seeds.
But starting, if you never gardened, doing it that way the first year or mm-hmm. second year to get experience to understand how certain things work, and then put your investment into the good products.
And maybe you're like, I don't know if I want to. Maybe you've been continuing gardening for X amount of years, and you're like, I want more space. I'm going to finally turn my soil over. You know, that's good. And then you can start minimally and see how that goes. So you don't necessarily have to invest, but you can. And if it's something that you feel that you're going to definitely enjoy and you want to use your time doing that, I say go for it, because the what you get back is amazing.
Well, let's talk about, let's take it to the extreme here.
Okay.
And talk about greenhouses.
Sure.
Cold frames, greenhouses, something that you can extend your growing season in some parts of the country. Unheated greenhouse you can grow year-round in.
Mm-hmm.
In other portions of the country, a heated greenhouse is what is required in order to grow the greens and the cool weather crops, that type of thing. So, you know, you want to keep that in mind, because a greenhouse can be an El Cheapo model you bought on sale at a big box store that lasts like 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and you get a windstorm, and now your neighbor has some scrap metal that once was your greenhouse.
Right.
Or you can, you know, spend thousands and thousands of dollars and create these magnificent high tunnel greenhouses where you have, you know, thousands of square feet.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever your desire is on that, and you don't want to jump in and spend X amount of $1,000 and then in 2 years go, you know, this wasn't as fun as I thought it would be, and now you're kind of stuck with a lot of investment and you're not doing it anymore.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. You have to kind of consider all of these things. So, like, for us, I think if we were to make an investment on something and we had the space for it, it would be a greenhouse.
Right.
But we don't right now. But that's okay, and we're okay where we're at. So, or maybe grow lights. You know, not for us necessarily, but for some people, you know, you've been growing seeds, and you're starting your seeds inside, and you think, now I want a grow light, and that might be an investment for you. So just think about that, and a lot of times when it comes to gardening, it's going to be an investment. It's not going to be a one-time, done and over deal. It's going to be something that you're going to use year after year.
But if you're going to go to the expense of buying a product,
mm-hmm.
don't buy an El Cheapo thing you found on sale, because most likely, as it's always been said, you get what you pay for.
Oh, yeah.
Do your research, just like we do when we... And I'm just going to give you a little secret. When we reach out to sponsors, or sponsors reach out to us to want to promote their product, we do research and find out, is it something that you as a listener or you as a viewer on our video series, would this be something that would be practical, affordable, and would be something that would be worth the while of purchasing and getting a benefit out of, not just, hey, okay, send us the stuff and we'll try to promote it. We go through... A strategic listing of, is it worth the worth our time to look at it? Would it be something that if we didn't do this and saw it, would it be something that we would want to buy? Is it affordable? Does it do what it's supposed to do? And will it last the test of time and not break after four uses or a half a season? So, you know, that's something that you want to keep in mind when you're purchasing not only gardening products but really anything. When it comes to that type of thing, when money's involved, be sure you look, read reviews, ask questions, and be sure you know what you're getting, and get something that's reliable, worth the test of time, that you can use year after year.
Right. And maybe it's not the prettiest thing, but it's going to last you a long time.
So with that being said, a lot of variables when it comes to what does it really cost to garden. And we hope that we've shed a little light on that subject for you and gave you some things to think about. Right after this, we will have Mike Novak on the road with the environmental report and your questions and letters from the kids right after this break.
Oh, yeah. What you say? You say Nasala Kombucha. It'll put some glide in your stride and some pep in your step. Nasala Kombucha. Yeah.
Nasala Kombucha makes your body happy. Nasala Kombucha makes your body smile.
at dollarseed.com. All of our seeds are only a dollar a pack. And we have online resources that teach you all about the rewarding hobby of growing your own plants, flowers, herbs, and vegetables. Imagine the joy you'll feel when your children actually help you harvest your first garden crop, or the pride of knowing you'll never need a florist again. Visit dollarseed.com and grow a little magic of your own for just a dollar. Dollarseed.com. What could be healthier?
Water is our most important resource. The key is to capture the rain that falls on your property. No need for bulky rain barrels that are hard to handle and just don't fit in. Rain Reserve has solved the problem for you. With their multi-size and color cube-like units, a rain barrel that does not look like one. Capturing rain easy, going unnoticed by passerby, and blending into the surrounding. Construction so easy, even children can put it together. To get your Rain Reserve, visit rainreserve.com and use coupon code RAIN2016 to save 10% on total purchase.
Now back to two gardeners that make no claims that they know a thing about golfing.
We don't golf, so we're not going to listen to podcasts about golf or watch television shows on how to golf.
But they're pretty good at gardening. Joey and Holly Bear.
Welcome back to the program. I encourage you to check out our sponsors on the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com on the podcast tab. We have those listed there. Support them because they support us.
Those links are also in the show notes below. Well, Mike Novak is with us each show as he dives into the world of environmentalist, and he brings us a report on things that are going on that we need to be aware of. And Mike Novak is on the road this week with his report, and here is Mike Novak.
And now to a man who's not afraid to tell you what you need to do to keep the planet he lives on clean.
Take your food scraps out to your compost pile. Screw in a compact fluorescent light bulb. Turn on a window fan instead of an air conditioner. Low flow, baby. Shower heads and toilets. Take one napkin at Starbucks instead of six.
Mike Novak.
Welcome to another installment of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Environmental Report. I'm Mike Novak, and you can hear me live each Sunday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time on Q4 Radio, which streams at www.quenumeral4.org. You can also get my podcasts at mikenovak.net, MikeNowak.net. I'm on the road this week, as you can hear from the traffic behind me. Very NPR, don't you think? Today's report is another of my environmental odds and ends that have come across my desk, starting with a report out of Germany. Quartz writes that on Sunday, May 8th, Germany hit a new high in renewable energy generation. Thanks to a sunny and windy day, at one point around 1 p.m., the country's solar, wind, hydro, and biomass plants were supplying about 55 gigawatts of the 63 gigawatts being consumed, or 87%. Power prices actually went negative for several hours, meaning commercial customers were being paid to consume electricity. Think that the United States is going to be stuck on coal and oil forever? Think again. If we're smart, we'll follow Germany's lead. By the way, Germany plans to hit 100% renewable energy by 2050. That's 2050. And Denmark's wind turbines already at some points generate more electricity than the country consumes, exporting the surplus to Germany, Norway, and Sweden. My next item comes from Inside Climate News, and it's related to all of that carbon we're unleashing into our atmosphere. New evidence shows that global warming will rapidly increase the risk of wildflowers. I wish it were wildflowers, wildfires across northern regions of Europe, North America, and Asia. Now, that includes Alaska, where the likelihood of fires will grow fourfold in coming decades in areas where they have been rare. That puts at risk the edges of vast boreal forests as well as tundra zones, according to a new study published in the journal Ecography. The problem is that some of those areas haven't burned in thousands of years. Now, why are they doing this? Well, climate change is behind a lot of it. But what will happen is that this will intensify global warming. Burning organic soils and thawing permafrost will send even more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And I can't think of many things more frightening than the idea of the Arctic being illuminated by the glow of the tundra on fire. Finally, are you sick of expanded polystyrene, which a lot of us know as styrofoam? You know, pretty much any time you buy an electronic device, you're trying to figure out what to do with the packing. The styrofoam industry will tell you that it's 100% recyclable. However, there are only a handful of facilities in the country that accept expanded polystyrene for recycling. And because it's so lightweight, the energy used to transport it to those facilities overwhelms the good of recycling the stuff. Well, the Homestead Guru has a story about a university in Thailand which has spent the past year developing a new type of waterproof bowl made of leaves. The women behind this leaf dinnerware were dismayed by the large amounts of styrofoam trash they saw at a temple. I posted this story on my Facebook page, and I hope you go to the Mike Novak Show on Facebook and give it a like. And you would be amazed by the ingenious design of the leafware. The bowls are woven tightly so they don't leak. And a coating of starch gives the plates a glossy look. Once used, they decompose naturally. They're really pretty cool. So why didn't I think of that? I guess that's why I'm a reporter and not an inventor. And that's the state of our environment today. I hope you catch the Mike Novak Show on Q4 Radio, QUE4.org, which you can always link to at my website, MikeNovak.net. Go green or go home. I'm going to try not to get hit by one of these cars.
So with that being said, it's time for, we've got two questions, and we're going to go over some letters from kids. So the first question is?
Sure. So they said I've tried to have a garden for many years now, and I could use some advice. It seems like my plants grow pretty big, but I don't get much of a harvest except for my cukes and kohlrabi. Not sure what I'm doing wrong. I don't usually fertilize because, honestly, I like to go organic, but not sure what to use.
Well, there's a couple of things that could be contributing factors to this individual situation. If you're not fertilizing, you're depleting, you're pulling out nutrients from the soil and not putting it back, whether you're not adding compost, shredded leaves, rotted manure, fill in the blank, you've got to give back to the soil.
Mm-hmm.
She says the plants, or he or whomever it is, says the plants grow relatively well, but they don't produce a whole lot of fruit or vegetables. Well, this can be a sign that your pH may be off. Most garden soil, well, most vegetables that you grow in your garden, require a pH, which is a scale of alkaline to acidity. Or is it acidity to alkaline? Alkaline. Anyway, it's a scale of 0 to 14 there.
Alkaline to acidity, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And most plants want a 7 neutral pH. Now, you can find out what your pH is by getting an accurate measurement by sending a sample off to your local university extension office for a soil test. You can buy those devices at your garden center that will give you a rough estimate. Not really sure how accurate they are, the things with the probes and you stick down the ground, and it gives you a digital mm-hmm. readout or an analog readout. If your pH is extremely high, then your plants, yes, will grow very nicely, but produce very little. The other thing it may be is you have a high level of nitrogen in the soil, great production on plants, minimal production on produce.
Right.
So there's a lot of contributing. There's a lot of things that could be wrong with this garden. So that's just some of the things maybe that's happening in your garden that maybe what's going on in this individual's garden.
And then the fertilizer. So she doesn't know what to use. You know, she wants to grow organic. Well, there is a lot of organic fertilizer available.
Affordable. And inexpensive.
Yeah.
You got Age Old, which is a sponsor on the program. There's liquid fertilizer as well as granular fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have a good fertile soil by using compost that you're bringing in each year, you'll need minimal amount of fertilizer. If mm-hmm. you're not using any of it, the nutrients has been sucked from the ground. So there's a lot of things going on with that question. And unless, you know, I have more information, that's about the best we can do with that.
Right.
So the next question, this one comes from, that one was from Wisconsin, which it's a universal question.
Mm-hmm.
This one is from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I usually harvest my onion seeds at the end of the season when they have dried out. This year, I really need the room to plant other things and like to know if I can cut off the flower bulbs and put them in a brown paper sack to dry out completely. There are heirloom Italian onions, and they were pricey when I bought them as sets to be planted. I'd really like to be able to save all my seeds for trade in for planting later in the year or for next spring. Any suggestions or comments?
That's exactly right. You can do that.
Well, she wants to cut them off early.
Cut them off early.
Because they want the space.
Okay.
If you're, what happens with onions, leeks, biennials, which means you grow them this year, parsnips are in this category as well. You let them grow this year, don't touch them. Come back next year, don't touch them. By midsummer, they will have put a flower bulb on it. And we'll see this in onion sets, the little bulbular sets mm-hmm. that you buy. A lot of those will flower too because they actually think it's their second year growing. And they'll put this beautiful flower on and have thousands and thousands of seeds. But if you harvest them early, those seeds have not reached a mature state and may be infertile and not be able to grow when you dry them out. Or they're so tiny that they don't have any germination capabilities.
Right.
So you want to leave them in your garden until you see that the flowers actually beginning to open up, or the seeds, you know, you can test a couple of seeds, they're going to be black, and they'll be, you know, consistent, you know, they'll be firm. They won't be dried out hard, but if you're harvesting them too soon, then you're going to have a problem with bad or in plant seeds that are not going to germinate,
right.
And you spent your money on the plants, so you want to make sure you get seeds that have reached, and this is with any type of plant.
He or she doesn't have to wait till they're completely dry.
No,
but once they start to flower, then you know that the seed will be there.
It's getting very close to that point.
And then you just don't
want to rip them up right away because your seeds are still going to be small. You got to wait for that seed to form
to
a mature state. So that's that. So let's go with some letters from kids. Explain why we have letters from children.
Sure. So a couple weeks ago, we went to my sister's second grade class. She teaches second grade. And we taught them about how plants grow, photosynthesis. We brought some seeds. We brought some grow lights. Her class, we went to a couple different classes. Her class was fun. All the classes were fun, but this one kid started talking to us about lava and volcanoes. We got kind of sidetracked. But
All the children, these are second graders, right?
Yeah. So her class wrote us some notes.
Wrote us some letters.
And they drew some pictures and stuff. It's quite precious.
Which you can't see that, but we're going to, a lot of them drew pictures of Holly and myself. Some got the proportions right, others did not. No, I'm talking big heads and small bodies, cartoon-like. So we're going to read a couple of these letters because they're very nice and they were very appreciative of it. So Holly, you can read what you got.
Dear Holly and Joey, thank you for coming to our class. I learned about the plants. I like the light. It looks like an alien. Thank you.
We brought the LED, Happy Leaf LED grow light, which is about a foot long, and the kids were mesmerized by that grow light. This one says, Dear Holly and Joey, thank you for coming to our class. I learned about plants. I like sunflowers. Thank you, Holly and Joey.
Yeah, and she wrote photosynthesis. They had learned about photosynthesis, so whoever wrote this wrote it on there. And that's good. That's a good science word.
All right, here's one here.
Now, this girl drew me and her. She didn't draw me and
Joey. No, I was left out of this. So
she said, I learned about plant seed. I like the seed you gave me. Thanks for the seed. So she was impressed with the seeds.
So what we did when we gave the seeds was we had a whole bunch of radish pods that had dried that we were saving seeds for. So all the kids got two or three radish pods. You know, radish pods, when you grow a radish and it goes to seed, it goes to flower, if you allow that to continue to grow, you'll have edible pods that, if left to dry, will have seeds in that pod for the next growing season. So we had a whole bunch of these. So we just gave all the kids some radish pods so they could open up. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls, there was no seeds in her pod, and she said her pod was broken. So
this one says, "Dear Holly and Joey, thank you for coming to our class. I learned about plants. I like the light. Thanks." And so she drew some sunflowers, maybe some daisies, I don't know. But they liked the light. They thought that was really cool.
Dear Holly and Joy, thank you for coming to our class. I learned about plants. I like the plants in the book. We brought a bunch of seed catalogs for them to look at all the different varieties and colors of vegetables and flowers and fruits. Thank you for coming. So, and now with these classes, there is... And I'm just going to say it. I'm a white boy from the country, okay? I only know partial English, okay? A lot of these classes were bilingual, and some of these children that we talked to didn't understand English, and the teacher would translate to them what we were saying. Mm-hmm. I know uno, and I know rodeo. That's pretty much the extent of my Spanish vocabulary, okay? Yeah. So, you know, it's a different atmosphere. You go in there, and you say something, and you have to pause for the teacher to...
Not all the time.
Not all the time, but certain words the children have to be translated into their language. Do we have any more? Do we want to look at one or two more here before Aaron comes on the program?
Yeah.
But this was, you know, something that
Hold on. I think we looked at those.
Yeah, we looked at those. Let's look.
Okay.
But, that, you know, a very nice thing to have the kids do. This girl drew her on the back of the card.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's you with your big googly glasses, that's me, I guess, with no hair.
She called us silly.
Oh, we're silly.
Yeah.
Well, we've been called far worse. Yeah.
Thank you for coming to our class. I learned about plants. I like when you were talking about compost. Thanks. Okay, yeah. So compost, they learned about compost. That's another thing we brought. We brought our little compost bucket that we keep inside, and we had some coffee grounds in there, tea bag, or rotten apple. I don't know, whatever else.
Kitchen scraps.
So they were impressed by that. Ooh, you know. This one said they learn about flowers and vegetables. So
with that being said, we appreciate the opportunity to talk to kids. Whether they got anything out of it or not, it gave the teachers about a 45-minute break each time we went to a class.
I think they got something.
They got something out of it. They were excited about it. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, we will be right back with a YouTuber and a homesteader at the foothills of the Appalachian Mountain. We were very happy we were able to get a hold of him because, you know, when you're in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, technology is not always your friend.
No.
So we'll be right back with Aaron Thatcher. No gardener wants to walk through a garden with dull, droopy flowers. You want your flowers to be big, bright, and beautiful. With age-old bloom, you can have flowers that will achieve this. Bloom supplies flowers with a high level of phosphorus and encourages flowers to bloom big, bright, and beautiful. Visit ageold.com for more information on Age Old products, Bloom, and our suppliers.
Do you want your next raised beds to be easy, functional, and beautiful? The Embrace helps you create the garden you've always wanted. Finally, raised beds that everyone can assemble and enjoy. No tools needed. Just slide any lumber into the Embrace corner, fill with your favorite soil mix, and you're ready to plant. Made from 100% recycled steel right here in the USA. And a portion of every sale helps to build school and community gardens all across the country. Let the Embrace help you create your next raised bed. Grow beautifully with the Embrace, available at local garden centers and online at artofthegarden.net.
Looking for a fast-acting, non-toxic weed killer for your organic garden? One that works in cool and cloudy conditions as low as 40 degrees and is highly biodegradable with visible results in less than 2 hours? Then look no more. Avenger Weed Killer has it all and more. Made from oranges, Avenger is highly effective, easy to use, and has a pleasant citrus aroma. It is OMRI listed and approved for organic gardeners under the USDA's National Organic Program. Avenger Avenger Weed Killer is a choice for organic gardeners and homeowners who are looking for an effective, safe way to control unwanted weeds. Available in ready-to-use sprays and concentrate, ask your local lawn and garden supplier for Avenger Weed Killer. For more information and a list of suppliers, visit AvengerOrganics.com. Avenger Weed Killer, eco-friendly, deadly to weeds.
This is Jeff Radke from the Lost Skills Podcast. You can listen to me at LostSkillsPodcast.com. Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast with Holly and Joey Baird.
We want to welcome you back to the program. You can go ahead and check out our sponsors on our website at theWisconsinVegetableGardener.com under the podcast tab. Feel free to support them as they support us.
So let's go to the TWVG hotline and bring in our next guest. We're going to Eastern Tennessee to bring in our next guest. He is a homesteader, self-sufficient liver, and utilizes the land to the best that he is able to. Aaron Thatcher grows, along with his wife and his two kids, utilize the property to its fullest potential with free-range chickens and ducks and their very large garden to produce as much healthy food as possible. You can follow his journeys on his YouTube channel, Planting Freedom, A. Thatcher 85, which that link will be in the show notes for this particular program. Aaron jokingly thanks the big chemical companies for spraying the common food that we get every day with toxins because it gave him a reason to get off the couch. Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, Aaron Thatcher.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to join us on the program.
So we want to start by talking about the technique you garden. There is no right or wrong way to garden in a general sense, as long as you're growing your own food. But the technique that you grow in kind of may be labeled as like lazy, but we don't want to label that because everybody should grow food. You don't pull weeds. Why did you decide to garden this fashion? And how have you found your plants react to this? Because we are taught, you know, to weed, weed, weed.
I think it's probably the more natural way to garden. You know, Native Americans, you know, they lived off of a lot of the crops that we all grow nowadays. And I see it more as calories in versus calories out. You know, when you're growing food, not necessarily as a hobby, but more kind of to feed the family, you shouldn't have to spend as much time growing food because farming's tough. Everybody knows that farming's hard. It's a lot of hard work and everything like that. But when you look at the way animals live, where they just, you know, go out and find food, I mean, I think that's more of an ideal scenario versus, you know, the sweat off your brow type of situation, you know. And I do extreme Darwinism. I guess that's one way to put it. But a lot of the seeds that you get are from other parts of the country, other countries, other climates. Some are more wet, some are more dry. So when you get a bunch of seeds of a certain something new that you want to try, there's a lot of weak genes and a lot of genes that necessarily won't be good for where you're at. So what I do is the first year I grow something new, I plant it out and let the rain do it. I don't water it. I don't weed it. I just let it grow. And then hopefully I've only got a few of them left, and those are the ones that I take seeds from. Because those are the ones that made it. Those are the ones that, you know, they handled no rain. Like, they handled the weeds. They handled a lot of extreme conditions. You know, it's kind of like tampering. You know, if you water your tomatoes all the time and you stop for a day or two, they're going to wilt. Versus if you just let the roots go deep instead of real shallow, go find the water on their own. There's a way. They have those things. They want to live, you know. But that's kind of why I garden like that. Also, I've got a lot of different things going on, and I don't want to spend the whole day out weeding a big garden and everything like that. So, you know, if I could do things, either let the weeds go or grow things that can grow with weeds, or if I mulch really heavy, too, that can kind of control the stuff that's real, real finicky, so to speak, you know. I basically do it to get really strong crops, and then they just keep nose and, you know, have really, really strong seeds, and it seems like the plants like it more. You know, when I've grown pumpkins and other things, there's things with the other plants to communicate. It sounds funny, but, you know, we all know about companion plants, and certain plants do good with other plants, you know, and that's just with garden vegetables. Well, what about weeds? What about stuff that grows wild in your area? You know, I think that if you let the weeds go, you're not leaving your vegetables the do that, too. And I don't know. I like the easy way of gardening. You know, I kind of look for an easy way out. I'd rather plant a fruit tree than spend, you know, 10 hours a week, even more than that sometimes, you know, all that time and energy in something that you might not, you know. In the end, you know, you can put all that time and energy and you can have no rain at the end of the year or too much rain and everything rots, you know. So I think it's the time you put into it versus the energy you get back, you know, calories in versus calories out.
Well, let's talk about some of these. Let's talk about the vegetables you grow in your garden. People who go over to Growing Freedom, 8th Thatcher 85, they'll see the tomatoes and the broccoli and the cauliflower. What are some unique vegetables that you grow in your garden that people will go, what is that?
I guess the main one would be amaranth. A lot of people aren't familiar with it. You know, there's a big health food movement that, you know, more and more people are learning about quinoa and amaranth and all these. Actually, it's nothing new. They're ancient grains that, you know, that fed people for thousands of years. And I've known about amaranth. It was one of the first things I wanted to grow, that and quinoa. And the reason, another reason why I started doing YouTube videos was because I couldn't find, I mean, some of the first gardening videos I did was about growing quinoa and amaranth, and I couldn't find any good information on it, you know, big YouTube videos. And since then, that's about 5 years ago. Since then, there's more information out there and stuff like that, but the amaranth would probably be one of them. Jerusalem artichoke, sunchoke, is becoming more and more popular in the garden community. Cherokee pumpkin is a new type of pumpkin that I got from an old man. He's about 75 years old, and he's selling pumpkins at the end of his driveway. And I got to talking to him. We were going to buy some from him, and he said he's grown them his whole life. And his grandfather grew those pumpkins, and they grew them along cornfields, and he said that the Cherokee used to grow them in this area. So what that told me is this is a Cherokee heirloom. You know, this man has been keeping this heirloom for generations, you know. So I grabbed it up and I grew that in my garden and it grew fantastic. I had no problems with vine borers. You know, it's the type of machada, really large pumpkin-sized machada baking squash. And the flesh of it is just delicious. You know, great for making soups and pies and all that stuff. We eat soup at least once or twice a week from all the stuff I froze and put in the freezer. I'm always trying new stuff. Galapagos Island tomatoes was something kind of unique, and I didn't grow it this last year. What else am I going? Something new I'm going to try this year, which is a little bit different. I found a variety of summer squash growing up a tree on the street that I live on. And I have a couple videos that I want to put together on that where I went back a couple times. But I got about a dozen of these wild squash that were growing up a tree. You know, nobody planted them. They were just growing on their own. And after doing some digging and some research, that all the way from Missouri, Kentucky, and Tennessee, that squash were actually endemic to this area. That Native Americans took the ones from the wild and domesticated those, and that's how we have the squash to grow in our gardens now. So Smithsonian did an expedition in 1992, or I think sometime in the 90s, where they went to the Ozark Mountains in Missouri and actually found a new species of the wild ancestor of summer squash that you grow in your garden. And so I don't know if it's a new species or an ancient one or, you know, a garden escape, but I'm going to be growing that this year. So I should be having some videos on that coming up, which is pretty weird. It's a really weird-looking squash.
And then you grow the normal Jerusalem artichokes, but you also have a wild variety that's a red pigmentation. Is that correct?
It's a little bit darker. It's a little bit darker. I did dig up a bunch from my neighbors across the street. And in this area, you know, the Cherokees live for a long time. You know, there's a lot of history. Everybody's related. And everybody's got Cherokee in them out here. And the rolling hills and everything like that. And these kind of seeds were the majority of the Cherokee were before they sent them all to Oklahoma. So agriculture in this area is a very fertile ground. It's a cultural thing. People have been growing food in this area for a long time. So these sunchokes that are growing wild probably used to be in Native American gardens. There's wild plums that some people call Cherokee plums, the Chickasaw plums. And they grow wild around here. Pawpaws were also planted by Native Americans, and they had orchards of them. So the red-tinted Jerusalem artichokes that I found, I think they could have been planted by the Cherokee a long time ago, and they've just been growing wild ever since. So, They're not as big, though. The ones, the wild ones that I dug up weren't as big as regular shrimp chokes. So I'm going to plant them in my garden and see if, you know, really loose, good fertile soil will help out or not, if they're still going to take them off in the rest.
So you have a wife and two kids, and this is no secret as they appear on your videos. And obviously your kids had no choice, but when you told your wife that you wanted to have a homestead and grow food and make that shift, some spouses would say, no way, we're not doing this. What was your wife's reaction?
We were living in the city at the time. We were living in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which is a huge tourist town. And there was a lot of crime. There was a lot of things going on. And I think when she started having kids, the priorities changed a little bit. You kind of, you know, you want to do what's best for them and everything like that. And, you know, once I started, you know, I knew about GMO food, but once you kind of have kids, you kind of start looking to question the stuff that you're feeding your kids. You want them to have the healthiest food possible. And like Joey said at the beginning of the show, that, you know, that was one of the main driving forces to get me to start growing my own food. You know, that we were being poisoned on a daily basis from what we ate and stuff we bought from other people. So once I started talking to my wife about it, she's from another country. She's actually from Russia, so she's used to the whole having a country house and, you know, good, wholesome food. And I guess when you come from another country and you see how things, you know, the way that the food system is, the way that you go to the grocery store and it's eternal summer, you know, you can get anything you want at all times, any time of the year. You know, things were more seasonal for her. So it wasn't too big of a shift for her, let's say, but she's also from the city, and I'm a city boy, too. So, it wasn't too big of a struggle. You know, it was something that I talked about a lot. And we got the opportunity. We got rid of a bunch of our stuff and decided to live a simple life up in the mountains and raise our family and eat good, healthy food and everything like that. And I was pretty fortunate. You know, my wife was kind of had the same intentions as I did, you know, and she was willing to try it out, and it's worked out so far. So I'm sure if things didn't work out as good as what we wanted them to, we probably wouldn't have lasted very long and probably would have went back to living in the city, working and stuff, and looking for the man, you know.
Well, let's talk. Let me ask you this. You know, you have viewers of your YouTube channel all over the world. We have viewers as well. And, you know, people will say, oh, you know, you have a very successful garden, but I can't grow. I have a black thumb. I could never grow anything as successful as you. What do you say to those individuals who make that comment?
Don't give up. Find what works. You know, a lot of the first stuff I grew, it was horrible. You know, I think a lot of it comes with experience and kind of understanding what, you know, how it all works and stuff like that. If you want to grow food, you will, you know, basically, if that's a priority to you. You know, when we lived in the city, I had no room to grow. We were in the second story apartment. I started doing videos. I just started grabbing containers and filling them with dirt and planting stuff and, you know, trying to learn as much as I could from other YouTube videos and, you know, scouring the internet and stuff like that. So if there's a will, there's a way. You know, it wasn't just going to be one of my fly-by-night hobbies that I get temporarily obsessed about something, you know, for just a little bit, and then I give up right away. No, I wanted to do it kind of full force and stuff. So I think if you're having troubles gardening and you're not doing good at it, try something different. Go to a local farmer's market, and even if tomatoes that you grew didn't do too good, maybe the local ones do. Maybe the one that the little old lady down the street's been growing for 30 years will do great. You know, and that's one of the reasons why, like I said in the beginning of the show, that a lot of the stuff you grow from seed might not do that good. And if it does good this year, it might not do good next year. It doesn't mean to give up. You could be using seeds that aren't necessarily designed to be grown in your area. You know, if they're used to be growing in that dry areas and you're really wet, you know, just kind of know what you're doing. And I think the main thing is no matter where you are, there was Native Americans growing food there long before we were there. Find out what type of tribes live in that area. Try to search heirloom vegetables associated with those tribes, like the Iroquois, you know, if you live in the Midwest, or even the Sioux. You know, they all have certain crops with their name on them that they grew there for hundreds and thousands of years. So try that. Try the, you know, the tried, true, and tested methods. You know, the little old lady with heirloom vegetables, Native American crops that are native to your area or grown by Native Americans from your area. And, just don't give up. You know, there's got to be something. And hey, if you suck at growing food, there's food everywhere. You know, a lot of stuff I grew this year did horrible, but yet I found my squash I planted did horrible. But I found wild squash growing down the street. You know, I planted some blackberries and raspberries, and we didn't have a lot of rain, so it kind of they didn't do too much. But I found a bunch of wild patches growing on my property. So, you know, sometimes it's a little bit easier. You can find wild food, you know, and kind of just transplant it. You know, if you find some blackberries or something like that, just dig some up, transplant them. You got food growing on your property. You know, that's, permaculture is the easiest way. Permanent agriculture. You know, gardening and farming and, you know, working the soil and all that stuff. It takes a little bit more energy, a little bit more time, and can be more frustrating versus just planting something and coming back every year. So yeah, just don't give up. And if you're passionate about it, try growing something in your windowsill. See how that does, and then go from there.
Great. Now, we talk about this all the time, how you have to feed your soil, how the soil is the lifeblood of your plants. What are some ways that you rejuvenate your soil and feed it?
I try not to work it too much, kind of leave it lie. There was a lot of beds that I didn't do anything with this year. I basically let it grow, let the weeds take over, and then, you know, all those weeds with the snow this year, it's going to turn into a layer of mulch by next spring. And I do leaf mulching and stuff like that. I really don't add any fertilizers. I don't really add any amendments and stuff. You know, I was very fortunate to have very fertile land that we moved to. That was one of the main things I looked for, was dark, black, rich soil. And I don't want to burn it all away. I don't want to use it all up. You know? And it's very easy to do that. You know, you do corn a couple years in a row with no beans or nothing else. They're going to suck all the nitrogen and life out of it. So I think don't overplant an area. If you're only working with a little bit of space, definitely bring in some good compost. You know, bring in some really, really good compost and keep adding that, because you don't really have as much space to work with. But if you've got a lot of space, you know, you can skip a year in one spot and, you know, plant in another and stuff like that. But I did a lot of leaf mulching this year. I saw all my neighbors raking up all their leaves, and I put everything to sleep with a nice blanket of leaves this year. And that's going to kind of make up for a lot of the stuff I grew this last year.
Well, we'll close the segment with this question. It's a two-part question. One, what do you love to grow the most? And with all the produce that you grow and you find while growing, how do you preserve it? Do you can it, freeze it, dehydrate it? What's your method of storage?
Okay, definitely my favorite thing to grow is corn. It seems weird, but it's an ancient. There's something about it. You know, I grew up in the Midwest, up there by you guys, you know, so we're all corn fed, you know, the sweet corn in the summertime, and we look forward to that, you know. So, and then once I started growing it and growing the different varieties and the colors and how, you know, and just everything about it, I love growing it. And popcorn, sweet corn, flint corn, flower corn. I even got a new corn mill to start grinding up corn and the cornmeal and stuff like that this year. So I got big plans with corn this year. So. Preserving stuff, it all depends. The stuff that we use for teas, I take a lot of leaves and flowers and stuff like that. I just lay them in aluminum trays out in the sun, and by the end of the day, they dry out. I've got some teas, some really good teas for the wintertime. The fruits and stuff, they don't last. I eat as many as I can. We preserve a lot, and even when I made a bunch of jelly, I probably made about at least two or three dozen pints of jelly this year, and they didn't even make it. They didn't even make it into the fall. We were already eating it. You know, my friends coming over, and they got some stuff they want to trade with. Well, first thing I grab is the jelly and stuff. So, a lot of the fruits I preserve with canning into jelly. The pawpaws and stuff that I harvest, I freeze them. You kind of put them in you puree them in a blender, and then put them in bags and freeze them because they'll go bad. You can't really make a decent preserve out of them and stuff like that. But Jerusalem artichokes, I leave them in the ground. I'll actually dig them all up, and then I'll cover them all up with some soil and stuff like that and make a nice pile with them where they're not, you know, they're easily accessible. And then whenever we want to eat them in the wintertime, we can go out to the pile. Even if it's cold or not, they're freezing cold hands, digging in the ice cold dirt, you know, pulling out Jerusalem artichokes in the wintertime. So, yeah, that's a lot of the ways that, but mainly fresh, you know. The climate down here is a little bit more mild and stuff like that, so we've got longer growing seasons and there's more stuff available. can either. And we got a dehydrator now too, so I dehydrate and I can it. I sun dry some stuff like herbs for tea, and then the tubers I leave in the ground.
Well, Aaron, we greatly appreciate you joining us on the program. A lot of great information. I encourage people to click on the link that's attached to this podcast for your YouTube channel to learn more about how to live off the land.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
And we'll be right back after this.
It's all about the soil at ManureTea.com. With their grass-fed, antibiotic, and growth hormone-free cattle and horses, owner Annie Haven puts the quality in her premium soil conditioner. 100% organic and natural, whether feeding your flowers or veggies, indoors or out, you can grow organically with confidence. To purchase authentic Haven brand manure tea, small orders or large, go to ManureTea.com. Always free shipping!
If you could double the life of your raised bed boxes by sealing the wood with a non-toxic wood preservative, would you? Well, now you can with a clear, penetrating product called Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's 100% non-toxic and easy to apply. Seal your bare, untreated wood surfaces, even chicken coops, by spraying Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's invisible, seals the wood from the inside out, and never wears off. Recommended by organic gardening experts. Internal Wood Stabilizer. Check it out at TimberProCoatings.com.
A gardener knows that the key to a good plant is its roots. With poor roots, the end result is not good. Conventional pots and trays cause roots to wrap around and become root-bound. Then you try to unwrap the roots at the time of planting, hoping not to break them. But never again with the Root Maker, a non-chemical innovation that naturally air prunes roots to create more vigorous roots. Never a root-bound plant again. Whether trees, flowers, or edibles, home gardener, commercial grower, more roots means healthier, more productive plants. To get your own, visit RootMaker.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm Farmer Lovejoy, host of The Dirty Cultivator, a podcast show where farmers can be heard promoting the consumption and importance of more locally grown food.
And I'm Carrie Kay. Don't forget to listen to our Northwest perspective at The Dirty Cultivator.
And now let's get to the garden with Joey and Holly Baird on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast.
Welcome back to the program. If you'd like to find out more information about the sponsors you've just heard in our entire sponsor lineup, you can find that information at our website. That address is the same as our name, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. And click on the podcast tab. You can click on the video tab. You can click on all the tabs and check out everything that we have available as well. Sign up for our weekly email. And if you've got a question, feel free to send us that with that big red button on the side of the page, and we will answer it personally as well as address it in the program for others who may have that same question. Well, before we get out of here, we got to get to Gardening in 2 Minutes. Gardening in 2 Minutes is an audio production that Holly and I produce on a weekly basis for a number of podcasts and a few radio programs. If you would like Gardening in 2 Minutes on your particular program, contact us through the website. This week's Gardening in 2 Minutes is all about
Powdery mildew.
Something that we're all going to face this year in one form or another. And here is Gardening in 2 Minutes. This is Gardening in 2 Minutes. Gardeners face a number of problems in the garden with bugs and different diseases. Powdery mildew is one of the more familiar problems that you may face with your vegetables, fruits, and trees. There are some simple remedies to help eliminate or greatly reduce the effect that this problem has on your plants.
Powdery mildew is a result of too much moisture. This can happen when you have a moderate temperature summer. This can also happen with too much rain, too much humidity, and not having your plants have the ability to dry off overnight. There's some commercial or retail fungicide that you can purchase for your plants. It may be expensive and also leaves a white, sticky substance on your leaves of your plants, which is not favorable. So there are some homeopathic remedies. There's things such as neem oil, baking soda, potassium bicarbonate, which is similar to baking soda, mouthwash, vinegar, and milk. We've chosen to use milk to control our powdery mildew. It's one part of milk to two parts of water. And this will help, when you spray it on your leaves, this will help prevent and get rid of the powdery mildew. Now, when you're spraying anything on your leaves or your plants, you want to make sure, yes, you give them a good spraying, but you don't want to oversaturate them, adding to the excess water on your plants, causing the powdery mildew. Just like any other sort of mildew, it's just a result of too much water. We found this information online. And if you go to your favorite search engine, you can just search Controlling or Eliminating Powdery Mildew by Joe Lample. And that's Joe Lample, and Lample is L-A-M-P apostrophe L. And that is where you can find the information with the different methods and how you control it with those methods and the exact recipes.
For more information in regarding to powdery mildew control, our weekly video productions, as well as our free downloadable digital quarterly magazine, you can find all that information at
thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.
For Gardening in 2 Minutes, I'm Joy Baird.
And I'm Holly Baird.
Well, that will about wrap it up for the program. Again, if you want to find out more about powdery mildew, you can go to our website. There will be a link in the show notes below from Joel Lample from Growing a Greener World. He's got a phenomenal article he wrote on some home remedies when it comes to dealing with powdery mildew. And, you know, you talk to certain people, oh, powdery mildew, that just wiped out all my plants. Others will say powdery mildew, it wasn't that bad. I had it really bad, but the plants survived. Realistically, powdery mildew is a mildew that forms on top of the plant that prevents the plant from receiving the adequate sunlight that is required for that plant to produce. So what we're trying to do is prevent or reduce and wipe away that mildew that looks like a bunch of powder on top of the plants. And you will know when you have it. It spreads very quickly, and there's ways to at least slow it down and control it. Well, we appreciate you tuning into the program this week. Audio on the program is courtesy of freesfx.co.uk and audioneutronics.com.
And the audio from Dollar Seed and Nasala Kombucha is provided by themselves.
So until next time, I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
And we will see you in the garden.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast is a production of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com for the health-conscious organic gardener worldwide, and distributed in association with WI Garden Media.